There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Chris Galvin, co-founder of Galvin Restaurants, including Galvin Dubai, opening on City Walk in the square there. And we got a sneaky preview last evening before the opening in a few weeks' time. It's a real pleasure to welcome multi-award-winning chef Chris Galvin. Hello and welcome.
Good morning, Sue. Thank you very much. And thank you for inviting me this morning.
And well, thank you for inviting me last evening. And I always like to say to chefs, now you're in my kitchen. So
no pressure.
No, yeah, you're in safe hands, because alongside you today on the panel, I welcome back to the show Orit Mohammed. She's the lady barista who knows her cold brew from her fine blends. She's the founder of Boone Coffee. Hello, Orit.
Hi, Suzanne. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very excited to be here.
Well, it's lovely to have you here for my last Thursday brunch. And you've just come back from Ethiopia. What have you been doing there?
I traveled a lot, especially to the coffee farms in the east, in Harar region. So it's exciting.
Exciting. Why? Why was it exciting? This is your tribe, isn't it? The
yes.
Harari tribe.
Yes, yeah. I'm a Harari, so it's almost like going back to my roots. So I traveled back to Harar travel. It's not an easy road to travel. So this was the first time I took the whole family, and we went to a lot of different coffee farms in that region, and we could even visited the farms our great grandparents had. So it was really nice to see.
Fantastic. And I know you are, as always, bringing new ideas to the UAE when it comes to coffee. I know, Chris, you've got a lot to say about coffee as well, so I'm looking forward to that conversation later on with Orit, alongside the honeyman of the UAE, who loves to spread his sweetness around. He's the founder of Balqis Honey. He is Riyad Hamid. Hello, welcome.
How are you doing? Love your eyes.
Yeah,
Susan.
I'm good. How are you?
Very good, thanks very much. Very good.
Excellent. Now, you've been away for the summer. You're back in full force.
Absolutely.
Continuing opening all over the UAE, the Balqis kiosks and stores. Have you bought in for us today?
I've just bought you a little collection of just sort of different, it's an eclectic mix of different varieties of lovely nectars from different parts of the world. So we've got something from Chile, from the Andes Mountain. We've got a beautiful kind of fusion of clementine, mandarin and orange with some Yemeni wildflower. We've got some cinnamon and sesame seed. We've got some truffle fusion. I know you like truffle fusion, don't you? So it's different varieties and some cider, the classic cider honey as well.
Fabulous. Now, in the years of hosting the Thursday brunch, one of the memories, you've just sparked memory for me, is do you remember when we did with the listeners a tasting and actually the listeners decided as well on what the fusion would be?
Yeah.
And you went away and put that fusion together, because I'm just hearing the sesame, that reminds me.
Yeah, we did. So it was an amazing time. We had so many different varieties and people just kind of tasting, and it was in this panel of just kind of in and out of different honeys and spoons and whatever. It was lovely, and we had truffle was one of them, and we had a Parmesan cheese one as well.
Yes, yeah.
Which we had a green tea one. There was a chocolate as well. It was really interesting. I think it was the truffle or the Parmesan cheese that one. I can't remember.
The Parmesan cheese.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That was quite popular.
Yeah, so interesting, isn't it? Now, I know you're a purist. You're all about the raw honey, but you can create your fusions according to your palate, according to what you're eating with. So if you've got a choice, or if you've eaten and tasted a honey with something unusual, let us know on 4001. What about you, Chris, when it comes to honey?
Ooh, I love honey. A big lovey honey. It was a pleasure to meet Riyad and talking about honey, because we've just moved into a house in Stratford on Olympic Park, tiny garden, but we got lots of lavender, and I just sit there watching the bees, and we were talking about, you know, honey from UK. Riyad saying, you know, he still doesn't get it. He still struggles with the flavours there, and maybe because of our roads, maybe because of our pollution. I'm not sure, but I remember a great honey I once tasted from Australia called Leatherwood honey. And that really blew my socks off. When it comes to infusing it, and I'll be interested to know how you do infuse it, Riyad. Things like truffle, I drive Luigi mad with it, because I hate truffle oil. It just drives me nuts. It's too strong. It's too chemical. It's so far away from the natural thing. It just, I can't do it. So I'd be interested to know how it's infused into honey. But it's a pure thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I just think we need to get back to that and the provenance of where it's coming from.
Yeah, so why do you fuse? Who is going for the fusion?
You know, what it is that when I kind of sort of started the venture, it was really good tasting so many different varieties of raw honey. But the thing about it is I'm always constantly thinking, what would that taste like with a bit of lemon? What would that taste like with a little bit of sesame? What would it taste like with cinnamon? So all these kind of things kept coming up, and I'm thought, you know what, I'm just going to create these fusions. So, and then I would get them. It almost made my kitchen like a lab, an R&D lab, and I just kind of put a little bit of cinnamon in, put a little bit of sesame seed, kind of let it kind of fuse for 24 hours, check the taste. Did it need any more cinnamon? Did it need any more? And it's just playing around with the spices, some of the herbs, and until you get to a point when it tastes lovely, this. And I'm sure that other people will kind of appreciate it. It just adds another dimension to the beauty of honey. And it's not trying to kind of take away what the real value of honey is. It's just kind of pimping it up a little bit, just giving it a little bit of, you know, kind of dressing, give it a little bit more flavor. You know, a little more kind of, you know, the different profiles of flavor, where it's coming from different beautiful natural ingredients as well. So it's that kind of dimension where you know what I wanted to add to it.
Well, people are texting in with their favourite honey flavours, their profiles, what they enjoy. We'll share those with you in a moment. One here, honey and peanut butter. Don't know, maybe, don't
I
know.
I love that in the morning.
Do you have that?
Absolutely, yeah. Some natural kind of peanut butter. You know, I always kind of think of Elvis Presley when I kind of do that. But I don't know why. Because I had some banana with it as well. So I'll mix the layer of honey with the banana. And the peanut butter on a beautiful thick sourdough toast. Oh my God, it's blinking beautiful.
Yeah, and it's all the natural stuff if you've got natural peanut butter.
Is.
Yeah, so there you go. You're getting the thumbs up from the honey man of the UAE. So, yeah, what do you think? Let me know when it comes to either honey fusions or your particular favourite tasting honey. Let us know on 4001. When we come back, we're going to be finding out more about the Galvin restaurant here in Dubai. Galvin Dubai. It's on the walk, in City Walk, in the square there. Absolutely stunning location. We're going to be finding out what's on the menu next. With Riyad Hamid of Balqis Honey, and we've got Orid Mohammed of Boone Coffee, and multi-award winning chef Chris Galvin, co-founder of Galvin Restaurants with 6 restaurants in London and Edinburgh, alongside Demoiselle by Galvin and Galvin Dubai in partnership with Miraz here in City Walk in the UAE. So we're very excited in the anticipation of the doors opening with Galvin Dubai in a few weeks' time. Tell us about how this all came about, Chris, coming to the UAE.
It's been a long time coming. I would say probably 10 years. So it's my younger brother Jeff. He was always fascinated with Dubai. We obviously watched what Gordon Ramsay done at Veya with Angela Hartner and Jason Atherton, who returned. And my first question was ingredients. Can we get ingredients? And I wasn't convinced. He tried desperately, but. Over the years, as we returned and we met different partners, you know, we looked at different possibilities, I could see the ingredients getting better and better. And actually, a good friend of mine from 30 years back, wonderful fishmonger, I think his company's Wet Fish, he said, you've got to look at this. The guys in Dubai are getting fish as fresh as we are getting it in London and Edinburgh because it's shipped out here so quickly. So then I kind of had a stirring. I spoke to more and more chefs that were coming out here, and it just, you know, it's somewhere we had to be honest. But I think our overarching desire was I didn't really want to be in a hotel. I wanted something you could step off the street and go into, something accessible. I'm a very sort of democratic person. I just like having things for everyone. Great entry points on pricing, and so it took us best part of 10 years to find a partner who got us. We're a bit strange as a couple of chefs, but Miras really understood what we wanted to do, and I have to say, you know, they've really delivered on both Demoiselle, which is all about all-day cafe where you can celebrate buying, making a purchase, or you can catch up with friends. You know, we were just talking to Ortiz about perhaps having a farmer's market in City Walk, which I think would be outstanding. And a great place, to put your feet up, Have a rest, have an afternoon tea. And then coming on to Galving, Dubai, at the other end of City Walk 2, we wanted something. I didn't want to pick up a concept from UK and bring it here. That would have been a bit lazy of me. So I thought, what do I want to eat when it's hot, when it's sunny? And I've worked in Provence. I love the south of France. I love Italy, love Spain, I love Morocco. So I started to think about something I've never heard of before, which is the Mediterranean basin. And I thought, you know, normally, because we grew up cooking French food, it's funny, because it's funny dichotomy, two Essex boys cooking French food, but there you go. But now I could sort of throw those shackles off, like so many young cooks today. They're not burdened by mixing cuisine, because they all respect the basic elements of how it's put together. And 20 years ago, you know, we had a very famous chef, Nicola Dennis, said fusion, confusion, and it's true. So we're looking very much at cooking the food of south of France, of Italy, Spain and Morocco. Luigi, our executive chef there, he's from Naples. And the first thing I said to me, tell me about life as a kid. And he said, well, I woke up in the morning, chef, flung my windows open, and I can see the sea. And I said, and the best dish you ever had? And he said, well, it's probably my gran and my mum, was these beautiful tomatoes that come from Vesuvius. They're grown in the volcanic soil with some spaghetti, olive oil, basil, and that's it. And I think great cooking, great coffee, great honey, is taking those ingredients, very simple, and cooking them. And I think that's what you want in this environment. So I'm calling it Cuisine of the Sun. It's so there's elements of the Mediterranean there. It's all about ingredients. It's ingredient led, market driven, and it's got a nice, you know, being 60 next year, I just think, you know, people say, oh, what, you know, what is Galving? And I think we're like a pair of brogue shoes. We're never in fashion, we're never out, but we're quite classy and it's quite timeless.
Yeah, really wonderful, wonderful analogy. And I love the fact that idea of Cuisine of the Sun as well. And that's how you're inspiring not only the chefs working with you, but your staff as well. So wherever they're from, what do you imagine when you think of the view, the scene, the sun, and bringing that sort of imagery into the plate is such a wonderful, wonderful thing. And it really kind of captures people's imagination, which is what it's all about, as much as that taste, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. It's they got to walk the walk, and you know, and the front of house, I shouldn't forget them. They're so important to a restaurant. You know, the whole atmosphere of a restaurant, the smell, the design, the service, the food, they all merge into one. It's about getting that whole show right, and it's getting them to walk the walk. And what I said to them, basically, imagine you're welcoming someone into your house. That's hospitality. And, you know, Dubai is a very, very challenging market. You know, it's one of the greatest spaces on earth to perform in. You know, if you ask anyone about performing, they want a stage. Well, you've certainly got a stage here, and we're gonna have to work hard to make sure it works for us. But it's just, yeah, getting to the guys. Fortunately, most of them have been to the Mediterranean, most of them have traveled, and they get it. And but it's about them owning it, most importantly.
You've worked before opening your empire of restaurants in many established restaurants, you know, the Ritz Hotel in London, the Lanesborough in London, the Wolseley Cafe, which you were a big part of opening there with the breakfast and the cafe. So incredible. And we're going to talk throughout the show and get those stories from you. Also work with the Conrans as well. So we're talking about style and design. Yes. How did it all begin then for that boy from Essex?
Yeah, it's a lovely story, actually, and I think it gives encouragement to people. I'm a great believer in we can do whatever we want. You know, when I have a hard day, Sue, I step outside and I look at the moon and I think a man walked on that. So anything's possible. I really, really believe as long as we're kind, generous and work hard, that's my kind of motto, we can achieve anything we set our mind to. Humans are amazing people. We have, you know, it's the two ends of the spectrum. We have great capacity for bad and great capacity for being good and doing wonderful things. And so I always think good will out everything else in the end. But yeah, I grew up in on a council estate, very simple. I didn't come from nothing. I come from something. I come from loving mom and family, but we didn't have a lot. We never had a lot. So what my mum made up for, you know, she was an awful cook, my mum, she would just pile it up on a plate and absolutely slaughter all the vegetables and the meat and the fish. But it was always cooked with love. My nan was a great cook, you know, during the early 1940s, during the war years, people in Britain, they had to grow their own. And that's what I loved. My nan taking me round a garden, looking at gooseberries, you know, don't eat that, that'll give you a bad belly, but eat 3 months' time, it'll be perfect. Looking at the rhubarb, looking at the pears, the apples, the carrots. And she had 40 grandchildren. It was a big family. And she was just always cooking, always in the kitchen. And so I loved that. I loved helping her. And then at 15, my father disappeared, and we were in big trouble as a family. And I knocked on the door of a restaurant, got a job washing up, and I fell in love with it. I had immediate family. I had warmth. I had money for the first time ever, shelter, and great family. You know, restaurants are all about family. And so I was lucky enough, the sous chef was Anthony Worrell Thompson, who went on to be Lady Diana's favourite chef. And, you know, I had 5 years working with Anthony, and he was a real maverick. You know, a lot of people criticise him, but he was incredibly creative, and I loved working with him. And then I'm a great believer in education. I went to college when I was 21 and loved it, and I believe in lifelong learning. I'm a great believer in that. And for the first time in my life, I started to win things, student of the year, best chauffeured work, and I realised I was good at something. Then to the Ritz, and I just tried to keep bettering myself.
Well, we're going to find out more about your story and your food. You brought in dishes today, so when we come back, we'll find out what you're going to be creating on air, sharing your insight and wisdom. That's Chris Galvin of Galvin Restaurants with the opening, with great anticipation in just a few weeks' time there in City Walk with Galvin Dubai. I am going to miss this show, I have to say. The energy in the room every Thursday for the past few years with the Thursday brunch format, bringing together people that are passionate about great ingredients and sharing their knowledge and their stories. And today we have got award-winning Chris Galvin, chef and co-founder of Galvin Restaurants. Just getting an update on how many restaurants you've got. 12 now, is it, Chris?
Yeah, it's 12, and that's it. It's a bit like children. We should have stopped at one.
Well, it's great to have you here in the UAE with Galvin Dubai and Demoiselle as well there in City Walk. Now, alongside, we're about to watch the man in action, although I've put a bit of pressure on him today because I've got him seated as he's going to put this plate together, and he's just told me he's never done this seated before. And we are Facebook Live at the moment as well. So if you want to follow us on Facebook at Dubai Eye, then do so. Alongside my friends and panellists over the years and real passionate about their food and ingredients, that's Orit Mohammed of Boone Coffee and Riyad Hamid of Balqis Honey. So what are you going to do for us today, Chris?
Okay, today we're going to kick off with a starter that we like very much, especially this time of year when beetroot is coming into season, and it's something light. You know, I realise we have to cook to an audience. The problem with blokes, with chefs, we're so much testosterone rocking around the kitchen. It's all tureens and meats. And over the years, my wife used to say in restaurants, I can't see anything I like. And I was thinking, I'm going to have that. And after about 20 years, I realised she was right. And it was true. And I was watching what I was eating. I was being careful. I'd given up gluten. As I got older, my joints were aching. I felt very lethargic. The minute I cut gluten out, I was freed. There's a lot of my sort of aches and pains went. And my life turned around since I gave. So I'm not gluten intolerant. I just chose to give gluten up, and it's freed me. So I was saying to Riyad earlier, you know, it's about balance. You know, it's the whole of life is a bit about balance. So I'm very careful with my breakfast, what I eat. I don't eat too late. I watch the sugar. I don't drink like I used to. And but every now and then I can go wild with my food, and it doesn't affect me. So this is one of the dishes that we've got on now. So we oven roast the beetroot in foil, and we can do that over charcoal or very hot oven if you're at home. Just wrap your beetroot in foil, a little bit of olive oil, and yeah, Riyad. I'd actually like to cook with Riyad, because he might come up with some bits and pieces we could drop into that foil. Absolutely. Pouch. And we open it. You can tell when it's cooked because you just rub it and the skin falls off. As soon as the skin comes away, it's cooked. And then we keep some of the juice to make a dressing. We reduce that with a little bit of balsamic. And so we take the beetroot, and I'm going to dress it now, Sue.
Yeah, go ahead.
Here's a challenge.
Whilst you're doing that, just looking here at our information about beetroot, and the Victorians used beetroot to dye their hair. Beetroot's one of my favourite vegetables, so if you are cooking at home, you will always get the red fingers, the pink fingers from it. But yeah, in the 19th century, to avoid getting pink fingers when cooking beetroot, you use lemon juice and salt before washing with soap and water. So we'll try and do our best for you today, Chris, with the pink fingers.
Yeah. Don't talk about the hair. I haven't got much left, so I just I flick it this way and that way. But we was talking about David Bowie last night and how he changes, and I quite like that idea. I keep thinking about getting it shaved off, but I don't know. I'm not quite brave enough.
Just try it. Give it a try. Chris.
I should
just whip it off.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I can't really tell all of his story because it's
There's more.
There's more to it. There's but more. I had a great photo shoot with the master, David Bailey.
Oh, did you?
I was pinching myself on the morning in his studio, and he was prowling like a lion, up and down, up and down. And he came up to me and talked and talked and talked. And I said, when are we going to do the pictures? He said, I've done them.
Uh-huh.
So mentally, he'd already taken the pictures. And he has a team of makeup artists and all the rest, and he said, you know what, Chris, get it off. I will take it off now. I'll shave you now. And
shaver, shall we do it now,
Riyad? We've just met.
It's no messing about.
I think I'll go for the red So we've laid the slices of beetroot on here.
He's going to be giving you a honey face mask before the end of the show.
I love honey face mask. She knows I do. Blinking love them.
And so, I like soaps. I like flavoured soaps. Foodie soaps.
I love flavoured soaps as well. They're,
They're super cool. So yes, this is a nice light dish. Shall we? Putting slices of beetroot down first, then we're going to go on some of the diced. You know, as a chef, lots of chefs use tweezers now. They walk around like rock stars with tweezers, which I've never really been into. But I'm trying to do this with two forks, which is not easy.
I love the shape of these little kind of roasted beetroot.
They look
like
super
little
cool,
pears,
aren't they?
They look like kind of little jewels of pears.
So I'm going to pipe some goat curd on to the plate here.
How do you make goat curd then?
Yes.
Yeah, we take the curd. So it's similar to a cheese, but we can take the curd.
Mm-hmm.
And then we hang it in muslin.
Yeah.
A little bit of a drop of lemon juice.
Mm-hmm.
To acidulate it. And then we hang it in muslin just to get it to the right consistency for us. And Bob's your uncle.
Yeah.
We're there. And this proves a good foil with the beetroot. So we take some beet leaves onto the dish, and then finally we had a really good laugh with Sue last night about these caramelized walnuts.
Delicious, I have to say. I mean, you bite into a walnut, and I like walnuts, but these were, like, as you said, this sweetness came from them. And you've spent quite a lot of time with. There's a lot of love gone into these walnuts.
A lot of work goes into these. And being the thief I am and the greedy so-and-so in the kitchen, I'm always nicking them. And I can see the chef's face, and don't take my mise en place because such a lot of work goes into them. But basically, we clean every walnut by hand. We poach them in a milk solution. Then they come out, rinse, then they go into like a stock syrup, and where we poach them. And then we deep fried them, and they're just marvellous. They're to die for. And they set off. I think any dish can be simple. So we've got three ingredients here. But we need that acidity. It's those four tastes: bitter, sweet, sour. But you need a bit of crunch. So we're just going to finish it off now with a little bit of olive oil, which I love, from Liguria. And then finally finish with the beetroot dressing on top. Pinch of seasoning, which I don't do from height. I just let it drop. And there we have the wood roast beetroot with goat's curd and beet leaves and caramelised walnuts.
Well, wow. We're going to serve that. It looks absolutely beautiful. So Orit and Riyad are going to try. I know we can't wait to bite into those walnuts. Whilst we're talking about beetroot, it's interesting to know that falling in love was considered a result of a couple eating from the same beetroot, because eating the beautiful beet may help your heart beat for that special someone.
Apparently. Love it.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
Oh, wow.
And of course, it's such a versatile vegetable, and you like a bit of borscht, don't you? You like to make that beetroot soup.
Yeah, borscht is one of the first. It's one of the first dishes they give you at college to make. And so we had a Russian guest from Russia last night, and he said, "I just love the beetroot. It reminded me of borscht from back home." And basically, you make a consommé from beetroot, which has got the just beautiful ruby colour, and it's served with sour cream and chopped shallots. It's just a beautiful, beautiful dish. And I could live on beetroots, to be honest.
Yeah, really lovely. Orit?
Oh my God, this is amazing. It really is. And I thought it was just such simple ingredients. I didn't think it'd come up so complex. It's really amazing. I love the crunch of the walnuts. And the sweet, of course, beetroot and the goat cheese curd, you said. Yes. Yeah. It's very light.
Yes.
It's not as heavy as a typical goat cheese, so it's really nice.
And Orit's vegetarian, so right up your street.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was with his wife. We couldn't find the dish for 20 years.
And for you, Riyad?
Oh, it was absolutely beautiful. It's, you know, I love the kind of the beetroot. I love beetroot anyway. But also the way it's dressed and that kind of creaminess of the goat's cheese and that walnut, that crunch is just unbelievable. That crunch reverberates across your mouth while you're trying to kind of chomp on it. It's beautiful. And you've got a little bit of kind of, the sort of leaf and the leaf, little beautiful green foliage in there kind of thrown in. It's beautiful. Mm. Delicious.
And when you talk about, the ingredients of the sun, or you were mentioning earlier about Provence and the south of France, I think of walnuts. I think of France and walnuts and them growing, and it's such a great, great ingredient. When you first went to France, first impressions coming from Essex, obviously you've been working in the kitchens maybe for a while, but it's got to be sort of a rite of passage, I guess, for a chef to spend some time in France.
Yeah, I'm a terrible francophile, so you just reminded me. When I was 8 years old, my dad won a Yankee on the horses, which is like an accumulator. So although we were very strapped for cash, I remember him coming out. He always used to rub his hands if something had gone right. And he bought a second-hand Vauxhall Viva. And we drove. I've never really found out why. He drove us all through France. And we stopped at the roadside cafes, Les Routiers, had the plat de jour. My mum and dad didn't speak a word of French, didn't know what they were ordering. But they were brave. I look back and think how brave they were in 1966, 65, 66. And there's a word that no one uses anymore, scrumping, and not a lot of people know what that is. Basically, it's where you take apples from other people's gardens and you get to know what the best who's got the best apples, who's got the best pears. And I was an expert scrumper. And when I got to France, to be able to scrump grapes and apricots and see oranges growing, I couldn't believe it. So I was hooked at 8 years old.
And you've been scrumping ever since.
I would.
Galvin Dubai, in partnership with Miraz, is coming to City Walk in just a few weeks' time. And we're getting a sneak preview with Chef Chris Galvin, co-founder with his brother Jeff. We've yet to meet him, but he'll be here soon in the UAE. And we're going to find out about how that's worked out, working together as brothers. And we've just been trying one of the starters there, the salad of organic beetroot with goat's curd, candied walnuts and chard. What I tasted that last night, which was delicious, also was the lasagna of Devon crab, which was amazing. And I'm realizing as I'm looking at your story in different articles, this comes up rather a lot. So tell me about the lasagna of Devon crab.
Yeah, well, I can't, having Jeff coming out, I think in November, I can't take the credit for this one. So this was Jeff's dish. And it's a dish we can't take off a menu. Luigi will tell you we got a letter of signed by 100 people at the bistro as a protest for taking it off. And so that's the problem with restaurants sometimes. Sometimes you have great dishes that after a while the chefs get tired of cooking. But you've got to remember it's a customer and that's what they come back for. So so the lasagna of Dorset crab is very, very thin layers of pasta, and then we make a scallop mousse, and we put lots and lots of crab from Dorset on the south coast of England, and we change around. Sometimes we do a sauce nantois, which is an old-fashioned beurre blanc, which is basically some beautiful grey shallots which are softened and reduced with some with some lemon juice, and then very carefully we whisk lots of butter into it. It's a very naughty sauce. And but coming to Dubai, you know, again thinking about the Mediterranean, thinking about the shellfish, we decided to do serve a bisque with it, and I rather like it. And so it's a dish that will probably never come off, and it's earned its rite of passage.
An amazing display and taste of oysters last night as well. So that's a big part of what you do. The Combray oyster is what I tasted. In fact, producer Joe walked in just as it was just slipping nicely down the throat. And she went, yes, there's an image of yeah. Suzanne that I always know. I love oysters. Are you a fan of oysters? I know you're serving them
huge
in the restaurant.
Fan.
Yeah.
Huge fan of oysters. I probably have eaten oysters every day of my life since I've gone into
now.
Yeah, big family. We've got a big family, and the children love oysters, but my wife can't have oysters. But I always check every single morning. I'll always check the oysters. I love them. They're a big part of my life. I've sourced oysters from all around the world. I just love the way they grow, the different styles that they can be produced in. In actual fact, the west coast of France, they have these pousse clair oysters, which they fall out of the bags. These are oysters that have fallen out, and Riyad, you'll probably like this. They grow naturally in these clairs. Yeah, they pick up the algae, they pick up the saline, and they're all different. And that's what I love about life, where things are different. They're not all the same. And
absolutely hate oysters.
Me too.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, I can't stand them.
Well, yeah, some people like them cooked, and it's horses for courses.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's an ethereal thing.
I think being from our part of the world, that we just haven't had it growing up, so oysters were introduced much later, so it looks very different from anything we ever ate from Ethiopia or maybe Yemen.
It's never even been introduced in Yemen.
No, exactly. That's why. So when I saw oysters, it was much later in life in Europe or in America, so it's still very strange.
Yeah. What about the coffee, Orit? What's new? What can you share with us today? What have you been creating?
Well, we finally have our cold brews out. So we're producing cold brew all the time now at night and selling them in the morning. And, you know,
and how does that go then?
So the difference between cold brew and iced coffee per se is iced coffee still uses heat. Then you chill the coffee. You know, you put ice after it's then espresso form or any other heat form. But with cold brew, you know, it's more of time, more than heat. So it takes about 12 hours at night. You soak the coffee if you're doing it at home. And you just, with cold water or ice water preferably. Or if you're doing cold drip, with the drip, there's a, you know, there's a couple of products you can use. It just drips very slowly, so it infuses in the coffee and takes a long time. So it would take about 12 to 18 hours. And it's much more smoother. People who say, you know, coffee gives me acid, or a lot of people complain about that, that takes away from it. It's a much sweeter flavor, and it's almost used like an energy drink now. It's really nice.
The coffee, what's your sort of preferred coffee, Chris? What do you like?
Oh gosh, I'm a complete fanatic for coffee, and I'm just wondering, I'm just listening how you're describing the coffee there, Orit, and I'm thinking, this coffee monster wouldn't wait 12 hours for this So, no, in life, all good things are worth waiting for. I love an espresso. And I have an espresso. Every single restaurant, first thing I check is the espresso machine. I make an espresso, I check it. We spent, when we created the Wolseley Cafe with Jeremy King and Chris Corbin, two of the best restaurateurs in the world, you know, I just had to work with them. I had to make sure I did that. But they have this motto that everything must bear scrutiny. So for 3 months we studied coffee, and we went all around Europe looking at cafe culture, Berlin, Milan, Venice, Vienna, Paris, and I was hanging off the ceiling like a cat. I had so much caffeine in me. And I realized how much coffee is disturbed by milk. When you add milk, it completely affects the coffee. And so I learned a lot about the Arabica bean and what Robusta does. You know, when Robusta is, you know, chefs call coffee kitchen petrol, because that's what we live on. And I think there was one prime minister that was up to 20 cups a day, and I was up there.
Wow, yeah. That's a lot of coffee.
Well, even on Ethiopian standards, because if you're in Ethiopia, and I've visited a couple of times with Orit, and the coffee's on the go all day.
All day.
The traditional Ethiopian coffee way, and you know, over the flame, and it just keeps being, the beans just keep being moved, and it's like quite cathartic, quite meditative. But the women come to the house, and the pot's there, and it just keeps going all day. And of course, that changes in flavour because of the strength of it, according to what stage of the day you're taking the coffee.
Exactly. It's, and the first cup of coffee is always the strongest, and you know, they brew the same, but in Ethiopian's case, they put a lot of water when you're boiling it. So, and you don't boil it a lot; you just let it boil once and you take it out. So it's a smooth coffee; it's much smoother. But when you're drinking like an espresso, it seems strong, but you know, the caffeine level of espresso is actually lower than, let's say, if you're having a filter coffee, a big filter coffee. It seems light, but you're having it continuously, that you're getting a lot more coffee caffeine.
Yes,
but people are trying to get caffeine every which way, so you know, for maybe a restaurant where you have to be on your toes all the time.
Yeah, no, it's not a good thing. It's not. I had to seriously reduce how much coffee I was having, because my heart was beating fast, and I don't sleep now. It didn't used to keep me awake, but it does now. But I live for coffee. I live for coffee. Amazing. And I was so excited to be on a show with Orit today.
So now you'll get to taste some of the best coffees.
Cool. I think it's time to go and heat up the water and get the coffee on. Stay with us. It's time for the news at midday. When we come back, we're talking more about coffee, more about what's on the menu at Galvin Dubai with Chris Galvin, and we're going to be dipping into some Balqis honey and trying the different fusions and sharing your messages. Lots coming in about your favorite honey, whether it's a fusion or just palate.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at dubaieye1038.com.
My panel of guests today, round the table, we have got the honey man of the UAE, that is Riyad Hamid, founder of Balqis Honey, alongside the barista lady. She's all about that fine Ethiopian coffee. She is Orit Mohammed, founder of Boon Coffee. And then the multi-award winning chef Chris Galvin, co-founder of Galvin Restaurants. He's got 12 restaurants, London, Edinburgh, and here in the UAE, opening in City Walk, Galvin Dubai, in partnership with Miraz. And and his brother Jeff, and it's interesting, we're going to find out more about that relationship, teaming up with his brother Jeff in 2005 to open their first solo venture, the eponymous Galvin Bistro de Luxe in Baker Street. Amongst many awards that it's received, it's also AA London Restaurant of the Year in 2006, currently holds two AA Rosettes, and then in 2006 Chris and Jeff launched Galvin at Windows on the 28th floor of the London Hilton on Park Lane with Andre Garrett, ex-Orrery. We were talking a bit about this last night, Chris, about Park Lane, the amazing views. But you did go in there and stir them up a little bit about their coffee, didn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a lovely story. You will like this one, all right? I'm such a believer in coffee. And especially today, you know, where people are so conscious about value and, you know, value for money. I think Rolls Royce is value for money. You get a lot of car for your money. But equally with a meal, when you've worked hard on it and you source great ingredients, there's a cost to it. But just before you put your PIN number, when you're paying your bill, the coffee really needs the caramel, the floral needs to be rolling around your mouth. And the coffee wasn't great. It was awful. Problem was, they bought 10 tons a year and they didn't want me to disturb that purchasing of that. So I said, okay, I'll bring my own coffee. I'll walk down Park Lane with a bag on my back. And that upset, they really upset the coffee makers. So they sent a lot of scientists out in their white coats and they were asking me that different flavor profiles. And I said, I'm just a cook. All I know is I just want this delicious flavor at an end of a meal when I'm paying my bill. I believe that when you walk away, you should still have almost like a any good in life. You should have this flavor rolling around your mouth for some time after.
Yes, I mean, I really agree, because even here, a lot of restaurants, coffee is the last thought, but it actually is the last thing you have before you leave. And coffee is such a has so many flavors, and like you said, you know, floral, chocolate, nutty. That's what we're trying to show. When I started Boon Coffee, it was exactly to showcase that, to show people that coffee is not a one-dimensional drink where it's just to get caffeinated or something. It's a beautiful drink that you can make it different ways, and different regions or different origins even have different taste profiles, and you could really enjoy it just like, you know, wine or anything else. It could be enjoyed in different settings. So this is what we try to showcase, and now people realize, oh, I like this coffee, but I like this, and you know, different taste profile. So it's an exciting journey when people discover that at the end.
Yeah, and I think, and similar like with honey as well, you know, when you start to really explore honey and the different profiles, it's a fascinating ingredient.
It is. I mean, when you kind of zoom into different parts of these kind of food groups, I mean, it is. They're kind of almost like kingdoms onto their own, in their own right. You know, there's the coffee kingdom, the, you know, the kind of honey kingdom, and different kind of food groups, kingdoms, whether it's truffles or whatever. And the thing about it is that when you educate the palate, you know, to have this level of kind of connoisseurdom, if you want to call it that, you kind of think, God, what I missed out so much for years, because it's almost like there's a new discovery. It's almost like revolutionary to your taste buds that, God, does coffee really taste like that? Does honey really taste like that? Does what this other food group really taste like that? Mm. It's only when you kind of put yourself in that environment, when you're educated about certain things, you get knowledge, and it's true, kind of knowledge is power. You know, it's the people that will recommend something, or you kind of investigate it or whatever, and it takes another life. And like Orit said, and Chris as well, is that, you know, when hotels buy huge amounts and they're so used to buying all these tons, you know, kind of per year, it's similar to kind of what it is like in here with some hotels or restaurants, is that it's the kind of bulk buy, it's the bulk purchase. And then when someone wants to kind of introduce something which is kind of unique and floral, different flavor profiles, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of going against the grain in some ways commercially. But I think more and more there are companies coming up, there are restaurants that are taking this kind of, like, we're going to work with a boutique company like Boon or like us or whatever, where it's really, that's the only thing we do, you know, it's the only thing that we really specialize in. Yes. and it doesn't come in kind of commercial bulk. It comes in kind of like manageable kind of small portions that either the coffee makers can produce or the beekeepers that we work with can produce, and that's an important thing.
Yeah. we've talked about it before, but olive oil is another commodity, another great ingredient. But again, you know, you literally could have the bottles lined up and
absolutely.
Do a tasting. And we are going to be tasting your honeys today in a little while, just to give you a few messages in on this. Layla says, I love lavender raw honey.
Yeah, lavender's lovely. I mean, it really is. There's a beautiful French lavender that I've had in Europe that they've sold, and it's delicious. It's quite nice, very calming as well.
And Lubna's saying, I tried once honey with bergamot, and it was absolutely delicious. And saying that in Sarajevo, having something similar with a citrus product, it's like a real forest smell, like pine trees.
Yeah. I mean, I love bergamot in anything, whether it's in my soap, in my perfume, you know, kind of as an oil. It's beautiful. That kind of citrusy smell just kind of awakens the senses, you know what I mean? It takes you to a kind of almost like this beautiful kind of green foresty lemony kind of tree, kind of sitting under it. I love that kind of thing, you know what I mean?
And we are also loving what's on the menu at Galvin Dubai now. Chris, what are you going to prepare for us next? We're going to just tease us, and when we come back we'll get into the dish in full. But what are you going to prepare?
Good. Well, we again going back to the Mediterranean. We're going to sear some tuna. It's a seared tuna dish, which is served raw, and it's with an escabeche. And an escabeche of vegetables, very traditional in the south of France, is where you would sear in a pan. You would sear some red mullet, and then you cover it in a liquid, which is sliced carrots, onions, thyme, garlic, and you cook this liquid. It's like a pickle. Back in England, it's like a soused herring, I guess. But it's much more delicate, much more elegant, as the French are. Love them. And they pour this cold liquid over the fish, and it marinates it. It starts to marinate it. So we're going to sear our tuna, and then we brush it with a little mustard, a little Dijon mustard, roll it in some herbs, and slice it thinly, served on top of the escabeche vegetables with a small salad. And then we take some aubergines and we roast them in the oven with some thyme and garlic, and we make something called an aubergine caviar, and we puree that, and that's served with the dish.
That's what we're getting. That's what we're serving when we come back with Chef Chris Galvin, as we are exploring the tastes and flavours, what's on the menu as Galvin Dubai opens in City Walk here in the UAE. Stay with us. How's the coffee going down, Chris?
Beautiful. I've fallen in love with it. Yeah, it's a fruitiness now. Just talking to Riyadh about it. There's fruit, like citrus, and it feels like a walk in the woods, this one.
Does, yeah.
Tell us about it, all right?
It's actually our kaffa coffee from the kaffa forest. So it's a forest coffee, and it's actually not planted. It's a wild coffee, so there's a lot of wild flavor, you could say. It's one of the oldest coffee that was discovered, kaffa being the name coffee.
she's laughing because she knows that real coffee originated in Yemen.
Oh my goodness, we're not going to get into this. But
no, we're not, but just educating the listeners.
But we know as coffee was discovered in Ethiopia, so this is Kaffa, the region where it was actually discovered, hence the name coffee coming from Kava, from the Turkish. Anyway, this is why it has a lot of different flavors, and it's a clean finish. And you can drink it, you know, straight black. But some people think it's a little strong. But, you know, that's adjusted for
it. It's absolutely amazing. Wonderful. How many different kinds of coffee do you do now at Boone?
We have about 6 standard. But always we have, like, the Guji, the Koshare, that we always rotate the new coffees, the new kids in the block kind of thing. Because there's always over 5,000 types of coffee are grown in Ethiopia that have been classified. So there's always something new coming up that we can always taste.
Yeah, really wonderful. So that's our coffee. That's going well. Maybe even turmeric might be included with Boone. That seems to be on trend in Europe, so bringing it to the UAE. So all the health elements there. And Julie, hello Julie, regular listener. She texts in to say, as a sleep consultant, I encourage my parents to include a teaspoon of honey for children at night over 1 year of age to promote promote sleep. And for adults, 1 teaspoon of honey and pink Himalayan salt for adults. The honey encourages the promotion of melatonin. So I'm assuming with, you know, honey and the Himalayan salt, or maybe with some hot milk, we wouldn't perhaps be recommending the coffee.
That's what I was thinking.
As well.
Yeah. Can forget your coffee now, or it.
For the waking up part.
You yeah, the waking up, exactly.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah, there you go. So it's time now to enjoy the next dish being brought to us by Chris Galvin. So Chris, talk us through it.
Okay, yeah. So this is the seared yellowfin tuna. So we want line caught tuna. That's really, really important. Sustainable tuna. And just talking to Riyadh, you know, we need to know where everything's coming from. And I should, you know, I wanted to bring it up this morning, was how important media has been in the growth of securing great ingredients, great techniques, discovering small growers, small producers, small farmers. We really need to look after these guys. And interestingly, you know, I travel around and around France, around Europe, and most of the best suppliers, they don't have Porsches in their car park. They have beaten up Citroens and have holes in their jumpers. But they live a wonderful life. And I think if I come back in another life, it would be as a farmer. I just like that ticking sort of beat of life. And you can't rush anything, most importantly. We don't know what next year is going to bring. And yeah, I just love it. I love this time of year, actually, in England, is Harvest Festival. And as kids, we used to have... We all used to bring something to school to give to people who had nothing. And we used to sing the same old songs, hymns, which I loved. And so, yeah, we do Harvest Festival is a great time. So
plough the fields and scatter.
That's the one. That's the one. I won't break into it. Otherwise, I'll clear all the audience you did have. But So that's the importance of the yellowfin tuna, pole caught. So what I'm going to do, I've got an escabeche of... vegetables, which are basically some shallots. You can use onions, some very thinly sliced garlic, coriander seeds, white peppercorns, some lemon juice, and we bring that to the boil and let it gently tick away. And the French have got a lovely word for something that just ticks. You know, when you've got something on the boil, maybe like a coffee, when you've just got those little bubbles coming up, and it's called mijoter.
Mijoter.
And it's, yeah, it's a lovely word. And when I was a kid trying to break into the chef scene, all our kitchens were full of French chefs, and I'd say, what's that, chef? And they said, no, I can't explain that to you in English. You won't understand. And it is things like sauté, you know, where it's the shallow fry, means to jump. Like a frog. So I love mijoter. So you cook this long and slow, and all best things in life tend to be long and slow. Mm-hmm. So that's our escabeche. That goes there. Then we're going to put our sliced tuna. So we take a loin of tuna. We sear it on the stove. Very, keep it moving, probably 10 seconds in all. Because there's lots of oil in tuna, it will transfer the heat very quickly and cook it if you're not careful. So we put this on here like that. Then we're going to put some of our wood roast aubergine puree, aubergine caviar, bottle up here frantically. It's a funny noise.
Yeah, it does, yeah, like a ketchup bottle.
Yeah, and you wouldn't allow me back on a show. Now, I've not bought my glasses because of the vanity, and I'm left-handed.
And we're filming.
So we're just going to squeeze the puree onto the plate, do a little chef-y pull like that. So today, chefs love their pulls, smudges, and smears. I'm not sure about it, but there we go. The first sense of taste is the eye.
Yes.
So we have to make things look pretty. Forgive me for that. Then we're going to put a nice little salad we call mezcalan, or mixed leaves, and that's some endive. When I used to work for Terence Conran, incidentally, chefs kept using too much endive. You know, they just didn't get it. And it's like we were talking earlier, you know, in the wrong hands, it's dangerous. So he used to send these mandates out to the company banning Ondive. Curly Ondive was banned. And it was like contraband, trying to slip it in without him seeing.
I see one.
One of those
Ondive.
Curlies. Yeah. One of those curlies.
So when Terence used to come in and eat in the restaurant, I was a bit of a renegade. I used to say, hold the tray high. When you walk past his table, the way he must have thought we was nutters. And then, so I'm going to, this is beautiful. I don't like many shoots. But I do like coriander, because a lot of them taste of nothing. Mm. But I love coriander cress. Coriander cress is very tasty, very cool. So then I'm going to finish off with a little bit of olive oil. Like this with my right hand. Look at that go. And then I'm going to season with my right hand as well. And it's really important we get the seasoning on the tuna, because it can be a little bit bland, which is why we need a little bit of mustard down and some Finn's herb around it. And there you have the seared tuna with wood roast aubergine and escabeche vegetables.
It looks absolutely beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Do follow us online. Check out the pictures at DubaiEye1038.com/Dubai Today and on our Facebook page as well and Instagram, Dubai Eye's social media. We've been filming and taking photos. We've also added some photos from last evening when we were there at Galvin Dubai, getting a little preview of what's to come in the next couple of weeks when it opens there in City Walk. So check out those pictures. Amazing what we were eating last evening. When it came to the mains, there was the sea bass and then the beef. Beautiful, both dishes absolutely beautiful. Talk us through the meat last night, the dish, the beef dish.
Yeah, the beef dish is something French I love is called a tartine. Italian is called bruschetta. So we've got an Italian in the room with us, Luigi, now. So if we want to talk about where coffee comes from, what is it? If we're going to start to talk about pasta, that will get exciting. So we do a little a tartine of bone marrow and mushrooms. So it's like a little duxelle that we serve with it. And last night in the kitchen, I was slipping in there, and I wasn't stealing any of the meat. I was actually taking the tartine of the bone marrow and mushrooms. So yeah, it's a lovely light dish in actual fact. I know Luigi spent a lot of time sourcing the beef, making sure it's got great provenance, making sure it's got it's grain fed, that it's got a good fat marbling through it, make it nice and juicy, and some roast shallots we serve with it. But what I like is the size, and we were talking earlier about food, and I'm a huge believer in we should eat better quality but less. We've really got to find a way of eating less but better quality. That way we can support small producers, the small farmers, because it would cost the same as a huge plate of rubbish.
Mm, it's so true, and that's the message we keep trying to reinforce. And we know that we've got the farmers market coming back. Alright, when's that happening in the UAE?
It's actually happening starting on October 9th. It's going to be, this time, excitingly, it will be Friday and Saturday, so it's a very exciting thing. So it'll be 2 days instead of 1 day.
That's at Bay Avenue.
Yes, Bay Avenue. So it starts at 7 o'clock. So with all the farms,
it's the first time they've done it this year to do it on the full weekend on a Friday and Saturday.
It's great, great idea.
Which is really good because you know a lot of people gives people a chance.
This is absolutely delicious. The yellowfin tuna. What do you think, Riyad?
It's just so tender. The tuna. I've never eaten tuna, if I'm honest, like that. It's just so tender. And the flavour is so subtle. It's not kind of like a tuna that you'd have, because there's a distinct flavour about tuna. And this is just so subtle and delicate and beautiful. And the aubergine kind of little thing that you've got going on there with it, as well as the what do you call that? The escabeche. Sounds like a penitentiary in Kazakhstan or something.
And, well, Harry Potter.
Yeah, it's just beautiful. It really, the flavors just kind of blend beautifully together, and it's so seamless, so velvety. The whole kind of experience of it, it's just a real kind of a gastronomic experience that you just yearn for in Dubai.
Well, how lucky are we that Chef Chris Galvin is here in the UAE with his brother Jeff, opening Galvin Dubai in City Walker in the square, which is just beautiful. I mean, as the weather starts to cool down, it's like you're going to be sitting outside on the terrace as well at Galvin Dubai with this amazing food at your fingertips and for your palate. Just lovely. But, you know, it's the food, but it's also the setting, the lifestyle, everything that goes with it. So we continue the story with Chris Galvin when we come back. We're going to be sampling some of the honeys as well from Balkis Honey, sharing more of your stories as well, your preferences when it comes to honey, how you like your honey, what type of honey, or indeed if you've had a fusion that you particularly like as well. Thank you to Jane, who says, what a wonderful discussion this morning on the show, Suzanne, and all of you. Inspirational, tasty, and getting me ready for a weekend full of shopping for food, cooking, eating, and sharing. Well, we aim to please, Jane, and that's what it's all about. Great ingredients, passion for good food, sharing the knowledge with my panel today. That is the award-winning chef Chris Galvin, opening Galvin Dubai in partnership with Miraz in City Walk. It's coming your way in just a couple of weeks' time. Amazing. We got a preview last evening. We're getting a preview today as well with Chef, as he's just going to be preparing for us in a moment, a tarte tatin. So looking forward to that. Alongside regulars, we've got the honey man of the UAE, Riyad Hamid. He's the founder of Balkis Honey. And alongside the lady barista, that is Orit Mohammed of Boone Coffee. Now, I can't quite imagine even that I'm going to be going. This is my last Thursday brunch, and I just seems so strange me even saying that, because it's been such a part of my life over the last 6.5 years, and these kinds of conversations and the people that I've met, and also being part of the food dialogue in the UAE as you know, I think about going to India with Mohammed from the farmers market and with Yale from Baker and Spice all those years ago, exchanging with the organic farmers of the UAE, with the Indian organic farmers in Rajasthan. And that was the beginning, really, of how we started to bring the dialogue to the table through the show. And the farmers market is just so amazing. And you are part of the farmers market. And we've been on travels, Riyad and you and I, we went to New Zealand. We went and found that amazing Manuka honey there on the South Island. And that will remain in for the whole of my life, will be one of the most amazing things that I've ever done.
Yeah.
I'll never forget you in that helicopter we went over the glacier, and you were clinging on.
I swear to God, I was clinging on to life itself. All I kept chanting was this spiritual kind of like preservation chant. Please God forgive me. Please God save me. Please God, I'll be good. And it was one of these kind of things that I just kind of like, I've never experienced it, and it was just amazing. It was, and everything all our travels, even, I mean, Bali was just an amazing thing, what we did together. And
amazing this year with the plant-based diet, with Chef Athena from Supernatural Kitchen in Galleries Lafayette.
Yeah.
And the restaurants and the food that we discovered in Bali, which no meat, all plant-based, vegan, vegetarian, incredible, absolutely incredible.
And honestly, from a media point of view, in the UAE, I've never sort of met anybody more passionate about pushing kind of like farmers markets, about locally grown kind of issues, vegetables, and working with local people on the ground and kind of visiting kind of local communities. What you've done, honestly, is just unbelievable, and it's amazing. And it's like one of the reasons why people just love your show. It's, you know, the spectrum of diversity of where you go. You know, one minute you'd be in a 5-star Michelin star chef like this amazing guy here, Chris, and then the next thing you know, you're working with people on the ground, kind of doing very
in the
basic,
villages of Ethiopia.
The villages of Ethiopia.
Yes,
it's just amazing.
You've done an amazing
job, honestly, Suzanne.
Well, thank you. But it's also been about your stories and you as the people that are creating great provenance of food, bringing those stories to me. Ethiopia, we've got to talk about that. All right. I mean, the most incredible journey. We went to the Sidama region to look at where the coffee comes from that you bring into the UAE. We went with Chef Izu and also Yale from Baker and Spice. Yes. And that was something else, to see actually the women and children there that are taking that red cherry from the tree and it being made into what we are drinking today here in Dubai. The effort, the work, and you working again, bringing us that organic, you're working in fair trade, you're working with the villagers, you're working with the farmers, and that's a big challenge in Ethiopia. So you're doing amazing work.
Yes, and you know, for us, for people like me to have a platform like this, it has been amazing, because you know, there are people, we're trying hard, because you know, we're coming from the origin, so we understand the problem. But it was really nice to travel travel back with you guys to see a different perspective, I really did see things, a lot of things, in a different way, because, you know, coming back again. And it's been great because it allowed me to see and to discover and to bring back my roots and the heritage. So it's been an amazing trip for us, for me to be, because Dubai I was literally the thing that broke me, that broke the ice for me.
Launched for me.
Because, you know,
the Drive Live, when you were part of the
a contest to see, and this is like 4 or 5 years ago.
It's
an amazing, and Suzanne from that day on traveling both south and north of Ethiopia, and it's not easy traveling,
you know,
at all.
She left me, you know, in north. I'm on the Eritrean border, and we've been searching for this rare white honey. You somehow seem to dip out of that trip, which for me was a bit ominous. And I'm with Ori and her sister, and we're in this barren land, and we're amazing.
It was the African Indiana Jones. I left you with the Indian, because he could only take one person in the truck.
And he took the journalist, and she was like, "You're going to go with him, and he's going to take to the hives in the mountains." I'm like, okay. I'm like, is that gonna be all right? Yeah, of course I'd trust you, alright, yeah, bye. She says, we'll see you in about an hour. That's Ethiopian time. So 5.5-6 hours later, but this guy, and I'm like, I'm doing this interview with him, this is the whole purpose, and he takes me up, and it gets more and more green and more beautiful as we're going up and up to the mountains to see these hives. And and I realise about an hour and a half in, he doesn't speak any English, so I'm not really going to get the interview. But I did get to see, in one of the most remotest parts of Ethiopia, the hives and the bees and the flowers, and they're being guarded by gunmen. They had guns guarding the honey. So again, I thank you. Amazing stories that I've been able to share through people like you and through the UAE. So you know what's next? It's Portugal. So you're going to have to come, and there'll be more stories coming from Portugal. Wow. And Chris, you're going to be in Portugal in November, right?
Yeah, I'm cooking at the Hilton in the south of Portugal. And I went last year, actually, with Heinz Beck, a 3-star chef from Rome.
And he's here.
He brought a cluster of 3-star chefs. I was the poor cousin with the 1-star. But I slummed it. But it was just amazing ingredients again. They took us out. They just introduced us some amazing things, amazing fish. And that's what I love about the chef's world. The collaboration is amazing. And in Dubai, in actual fact, you know, you've got some brilliant chefs in town, have been so good to us. Colin Clegg, Ruya, Reef at Play, what an incredible chef he is, and what a generous man. Gary Rhodes is an old friend, they're such great people. It's before I came out, it's anything you need, Chris, we're there for you. And that's that community. Well, I guess it's a foodie community.
It is. It's wonderful, and the sort of respect that goes with it. So we need to start with your beautiful dessert there. Well, what are we having, Chris?
Yeah, well, this is the famous apple tart tatin, and it reminds me of my gran. That's it's shameless, really, because I love apple tart. I love apple tart, and it's got lots of butter and lots of sugar. And I'm trying to keep Riyadh off now. He's got his eyes on it. So, this is an upside-down apple tart. It was created by the Tatin sisters in a small cafe in a railway station in France. And they baked it upside down so the crust stayed nice and crispy. Rather than getting sort of soggy, you know, we have this soggy bottom thing now with a great bake-off in the UK. How do we avoid it? And bake your tart upside down. So we take specific apples. The best apples are Pink Lady, I think we're getting here, Cox's Orange Pippin. And we peel them and we leave them in the fridge overnight. And so when you put something in a fridge, believe it or not, it dehydrates. A lot of the moisture gets taken away. Because what we don't want is too much liquid coming out of the apple. So we basically make a caramel in a non-stick pan. You can do it in a frying pan at home, in actual fact. Cut your apples in half, take the core out, let them dry overnight, and then pack them as tightly as you can on top of the sugar and butter. put it on your, put it on top of the stove, and watch when you see the golden color of the caramel coming up the side of the apples, you know it's ready. Take it off, let it cool down, and the reason you need to let it cool down is we're going to put puff pastry on the back of it. If we didn't let it cool down, the pastry would melt, of course. And then we bake it for a long, long time. It's about an hour and 10 minutes in the oven. And then you turn it out, and it's just amazing. So, yeah, it reminds me of my gran, and it's something you'll find all over France. And, again, it's another dish we can't take off the menu. So we take a nice slice of a tart. Without dropping it.
Can't keep my eyes off it. It's something almost like hypnosis, you know?
It is.
When someone's dangling this pendulum and you're just fixated on it.
I'm starving today, Sumna. I've really made myself hungry just talking about food, coffee, honey. And by the way, Riyad, I had a sneak peek at the orange honey. It was wonderful. And I'm already thinking about a nice orange honey ripple vanilla ice cream.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
I was about to say, what would you put with your apple tartan? Would it be ice cream, and or would you do a cream? What would you recommend?
We serve a creme fraiche, but you could do a honey based ice cream would go beautifully well with this. I'm just trying to get my squeezy bottle working for me, which is not happening. Normally it's a creme fraiche, and the real McCoy is we use one that's got some Calvados in it. And that's absolutely delicious. So we're going to put some caramel on the plate here. Nice. And then I'm going to, another chefy name, I'm going to rocher some creme fraiche on top.
And we are filming. We're on Facebook Live as we speak, so you can follow us online.
And then we're going to put a little, which colour flare am I going to go for, that one?
A nice yellow.
Purple.
As it's Orit's birthday today.
Oh, happy birthday to Orit as well.
Thank you.
Everybody sing. Lesser. 1, 2, 3 now.
There we go. I haven't got a candle, actually. We ain't got a honey-based candle.
No, I don't, actually. You know, we'll have to improvise. Stick a spoon in on top.
Actually, you could do a nice one with honeycomb, couldn't you? Sort of
you
candle-like.
You could.
Yeah.
You could.
That looks, looks like a work of art.
Oh, it does.
Happy
does,
birthday.
Thank you so much.
Coffee queen of the UAE.
Yes. We're going to cut into the apple tart tartan. And when we come back, we're going to be finding out what Chef Chris is food fantasy is. I wonder what his food fantasy is. So as Orit and Riyad are munching their way through Chef Chris Galvin's apple tart tartan to get the verdict in a moment, but sharing with you here the intro to Fame by David Bowie. This was a selection of Chris's, because as much as you have this great love of food, you have a great love of music as well, don't you?
Yeah, I love music. I would die. It's my food of life is music, and I love all music. I really love all music. I like new. I'm just thinking of my son right now, because anything he likes, if I say I like it, I like Stormzy, he goes off him, and so so my son George introduced me to Kasabian. I said, wow, I loved it, and I went down to your gaff in Brixton to watch him at the Brixton Academy, and he reluctantly come with me, but he soon got into it. It was amazing.
Oh, they're amazing, yeah. Band. And actually, not only did you see them in Brixton, where I lived for many years, but they're from Leicester. They're a Leicester.
Yeah.
You know, so where I'm from in Leicestershire, and we made that connection last night, and that in Rutland, where I'm from, there's a beautiful hotel called Hambleton Hall, and you know Hambleton Hall.
Yes, yeah, I worked there with Nick Gill, who we have sadly he passed away last year, but amazing writer, amazing critic, who Yeah, scared the hell out of every chef in the UK. He was pretty acerbic, but he was fun. Couldn't not pick the paper, the Sunday Times up and read AA Girl. But I was lucky enough to work with his younger brother, who was the youngest ever chef to get Michelin star. And basically, Rutland, as you'd know, they flooded a valley.
Yes.
And you had this hill sticking out in the middle of it, which is, you know, you can still see roads disappearing into the reservoir. And on top of the hill is this beautiful hotel, Hamilton Hall. And I worked with Nick, and I loved it. I loved everything about him. And I've worked as a stagiaire for 26 years. I used to write to all the best chefs in France and see if I could work for free for a week, a month, anything I had. And I really loved it.
Yeah. Amazing. I actually I wrote and performed a murder mystery for A.A. Gill. He was one of the guests with Elle Macpherson in a castle in Yorkshire back in 2003. Yeah, quite an interesting evening that was, as you could imagine. Anyway, listen, we need to find out about you and your
food fantasy.
So, Chris, we ask our special guest every week for their food fantasy. This could be anything. This could be a memory of something you've tasted or something you've created. It could be a place you've visited or you hope to visit. Anything connected to food. So, Chris Galvin, what is your food fantasy?
It's an easy one for me. It's a restaurant down in Provence in Le Beau. It's in a beautiful amphitheatre of rocks. Down in Provence, and it's a restaurant called L'Osto Bomonier. And kings and queens have beaten a path to this restaurant. It's just legendary. And working for Sir Terence Conran, after 10 years, he kind of trusted me, and he got me a stage to go and work in the restaurant. And he allowed me to stay in his chateau with my family, which is at the bottom of the hill. And it was the most perfect, most beautiful thing ever. It was good for me in one way because the chateau was so big. If I made a cup of tea in the kitchen and walked to the living room and forgot a biscuit, I realised I don't like big houses. But it was just stunning, and it was kind of place when you die and go to heaven you'd want to go to. And the kitchen was just amazing. I spent best part of a month cooking there. And when we wrote our book, my brother and I's book, Cookbook Deluxe, my brother Jeff had worked with Marco Pierre White for a long, long time. And Marco famously said he'd never been to France, yet his food was so French. And my brother, he just didn't get France. And so I had a lovely opportunity to drive 2,000 miles around France with Jeff, meeting all our suppliers. And it was a very tearful journey. And I wanted to end up at Osto Bomonier and have dinner. And we arrived, and you could hear the staccatos with their song on, and they do a beautiful aperitivo there. And the Gypsy Kings, there was a wedding being held next to the swimming pool, and the Gypsy Kings were playing. So I got the tie up of the music, which I quite liked. And so we were sitting on the courtyard of Osto Bomonier with all the olive trees around us, smells coming from a bakery, the kitchen, and we went in, and we truly had a meal of a lifetime. And I'm so, so lucky because the chef recognized me, the owner recognized me, and served us himself. And I don't know why I should be so lucky for that to have happened. How he remembered me from 1,000 people that have gone and worked in his kitchen, I don't know. But we had such an ethereal dinner that night, cooked and served by the chef, and they found some beautiful things to match it. The bread was wonderful. Really, well, I couldn't afford it, but I should have taken a room. So I guess that's the end bit of my fantasy, would be to sleep there as well. But no, I just loved everything about it. And it was such a special moment in my life, especially to be with my brother, who I love very much.
Chris Galvin, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the Thursday brunch today. Check out the restaurant. It's opening in a couple of weeks' time. Galvin Dubai. It's there in City Walk, on the walk. It's licensed. It's amazing. And you can also go and have your afternoon tea at Demoiselle, which is in the square, just near the cinema in City Walk, not too far away from Galvin Dubai. That's already open. So for now, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. Good luck.
Thank you very much. I'll see you in Portugal in November. Yeah. People have been asking why I'm going. It's been a hard decision to leave. I will be back on Sunday, by the way. I've got another couple of shows to go. But I'm going to be simplifying my life a little bit in the hills of Portugal and exploring some of the food stories there and the health and wellness writing. I will be back in and out of Dubai for different things. And you know what? It has been the greatest pleasure presenting this show. It's not been an easy decision to go. Dubai, I and the team and the family, all absolutely wonderful. So yeah, you know, who knows what's gonna happen in the future, but lots of creativity for me. And yeah, I couldn't have done it without you. So a big thank you to Riyad Hamid from Balqis Honey for being part of my food journey here in the Emirates. And a big thank you to Orit Mohammed as well of Boone Coffee.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.